Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The Slaughter Podcast will be discussing topics that some listeners may find disturbing.
If you're still with us, press 1 for crimes about cannibals. Press 2 for children who've killed their parents. Please hold for an advisor.
Hi guys, it's Lucy and Emma. Welcome to Slaughter episode 9. It's nearly Christmas.
It is definitely. It is upon us. The geese are fucking obese. We're ready. So, although Christmas is coming and everyone's purse strings are tight at the moment, we want more of your money.
More of it? We've got none of it.
We want
some of your money.
We want a portion of your money. Not for us, but for merchandise. And we're not even going to profit from that. We just want everyone to be wearing our faces, not our real faces, our cartoon faces on your breasts.
I want you to be drinking out of my face.
We want you to drink out of our faces, again, not the real faces, wear the faces, and potentially stick miniature faces on your fridges.
Yeah. And drink vodka out of our faces.
Okay. So, we don't actually have any of these things. Basically, they're coming in the new year. Yay, get excited.
All we've got is an idea and a design.
Yeah, all we have at the minute is an idea. And all we're doing is letting you know that it may or may not be happening soon.
At some point in the future. So we're going to get that up and running. What we would like from you now, though...
Not money, that was a joke. Please don't get offended.
Yeah, don't send us money. What we would like from you now, if you've been enjoying the podcast, and we know that lots of you have, and we've got some lovely messages...
Something better than money.
Just spend literally 2 minutes, go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review if you enjoy the podcast. 5 fucking stars! Look, we do this for free, it's hard work... That's all we ask of you. No money. We don't want you to do anything else. Just spend 2 minutes, 5-star review. That would be amazing.
Because we all know that bad things happen when good people sit by and do nothing. And as we know, I'm unstable at best. Yeah. And if this podcast goes down, I'm going down with it.
Right, so I'm starting this week.
Let's make an episode so they can like it.
Yeah. If you don't like it, just keep it to yourself. I'm doing Kieran Kelly, alliteration there in the name.
KK.
KK.
Was he Irish?
Yes.
Yes.
He was born in Ireland in 1928. Now, this is for Storm. She requested this on a Facebook group. Storm's not her real name, but she'll know who we're talking about. So he was from Rathdowney in Ireland, and he grew up in Ireland, but then he moved to London age 25. Not a lot about him as a young chappie. But it was 1928. So the reason he went to London was he went for a day
out. I've heard the streets are paved with gold.
Yeah, he wanted to find out. But he found out that the Queen Elizabeth II coronation, he wanted to go over to celebrate.
Big
I think
royalist.
More for the big piss up than anything else. It was one big party in London. That's why he went. So he went with his friend called Christy Smith. And they went over for a big piss up for the Queen's coronation. And they had a day drinking.
I'm really surprised. I didn't really think the Irish loved our Queen, to be fair.
I don't think they gave a shit. I just think they sniffed the alcohol and just came a running.
I smell a party on
yeah,
the air.
That's it. They thought, this is the party of the century. I'm there.
We'll be a part of whichever empire's got the booze.
So some believe that Kelly was gay. And Christy and Kelly went out for the day, they were drinking all day. And there's a guy who's written a book about...
Is Christy a man or a woman?
A man. Okay. It was Christy Smith. And they went out for the day. Jeff Platt wrote a book about this. So he's written London Underground Serial Killer. There's a bit of a spoiler alert as to what's going to be happening later on.
They dug a hole.
And he is a retired detective, but he was involved in the case. So he's got a really comprehensive book. So fucking send me a copy for Christmas. No, we won't give out our address. But
I'm going to say, I would love people to send things.
I know, I would love people to send. One day we'll get a PO box and it'll be amazing. So they went out and they got some prostitutes at the end of a long day drinking.
Nice.
And they, I don't know if they had sex with them or not. It kind of...
I would hope so.
Yeah, I assume so. But then...
Unless he's a talker, not a porker.
So somehow they ended up at Stockwell Tube Station without the prostitutes, just on their own, which is where the Northern Line meets the Victoria Line.
Oh, is it?
It is indeed. Still there. You can go and have a think about what happened there. Catch a tube. And at Stockwell Tube Station, Kelly pushed Christy in front of an oncoming train.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So this was his
just first, like House of Cards.
His first victim. Like, he fucked him off. Good day. Now, I know a little bit of unwanted information about tubes and dying. I don't know where this information come from, but I heard or was told or something. Apparently, if you fall between a tube and the platform, what it does is sort of like whips your body round. So like you're in two parts, but you're still together. So you'll get kind of pushed and crushed, but you won't know what's happened to you. So there was a guy and he was doing a speech and I don't know where this was, but he was telling me about it and he said he's probably telling loads of people about it. I was one of the audience. I'm just aggrandizing myself there, but he said that a lot of people when it happens will just think they're fine and they're like, oh no, I can get up, I'm fine. But they say as soon as we move you, you're gonna die, like this is it. And it's just the most horrific sounding thing that you think, oh, I'm fine, no, I can get up, I'll be fine. But you can't feel that you're in pain. And actually, you're about to die. Like, as soon as they move you. And they can't leave you there forever. You can't live at the tube station just in this sort of, like, gap between a tube. So, like, he says that he's been there with people. He's tried to get their family there as quickly as possible. Or they've made phone calls. And it's literally like, goodbye, I feel okay. And I can have a conversation with you, but I've probably got an hour to live. And every time I'm at a tube station I think about that and I'm just terrified of just falling between the gap and the train. Anyway,
like on Source Code where he thinks he is fine but then really he's just a stumpy little lump.
I'm not seeing Source Code. Why is he a stumpy little lump?
Jake Gyllenhaal is transported back to in time to try and stop something from happening, but like he's hooked up to machines, he was a soldier, and then you think he's fine, like they're just making him relive these last few minutes or something, and then at the end, spoiler, you realise that he's like just
stumpy little lump,
like he's got no arms, like it's the last few minutes of his life that he has, they've trapped him in that loop and it's just electrical pulses. Yeah, he can't come out.
If you are listening and you have no arms and no legs, please don't be offended by Emma's previous comment. So Kelly later, when he was questioned about this murder, said I didn't do it.
It wasn't me.
No, you fucking told everyone it was him. He was like, I did that. Yeah, because it's very hard to prove that someone didn't jump.
Or that it was an accident.
Yeah. So he said,
we're not banged to rights here. Like, calm down.
He said, I saw a blinding flash. It was an epiphany. I realised the solution. It's the train coming.
Oh, yeah.
He thinks that's bloody God every time, telling him to push people. So every time he sees a bloody train approaching, he's like, God's telling me to do it again. Off you go.
That's the only thing. He doesn't want me to give him a hug. He doesn't want to save someone's life. No. Murder. Yes. Yeah.
It's an epiphany. I realised the solution. So he's confusing train lights for God, and therefore he's flinging people in front of trains. So after that happened, he fled to Ireland, but then he returned to London. And we've heard this word before, he was living as a vagrant. Yeah. Another word for homeless?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Drifter.
Alcoholic. And he sort of pottered around, he made loads of vagrant friends. He was arrested for stealing food. And then on Christmas Day, here's our segue into Christmas. Happy Christmas, guys. 1975 Christmas Day, a panhandler...
Now, Did you look at what a panhandler? Because I hear the word panhandler a lot. It must come from someone that sells panhandles, but they don't actually panhandle.
I thought it was someone who looks for gold. So it turns out panhandler is a beggar, holding out a pan for money. He was called Hector Fisher, and he was found in Clapham Churchyard, stabbed to death.
With his panhandle!
With his panhandle in hand, with stab wounds in his neck and his head.
He wasn't stabbed with the panhandle?
No. He had been hanging around. Oh, and he'd been hanging around that day with several men dressed as Father Christmas. Last seen. Hanging out with Santas.
Like that episode of Doctor Who where all the Santas come and get... I've done a lot of TV references.
You've got a lot of obscure television reference that I know nothing about. I was trying to segue a Father Ted reference in earlier, but I didn't manage it. If you like Father Ted and you listen to this podcast, you're probably my favourite listener. Kelly was questioned, but police had no evidence. So they questioned quite a lot of other people about
this.
Why
would they go to... How would you even have a list of suspects for this crime? If you find a beggar dead in a churchyard, like, just how have you got any people?
They just asked for every other beggar that they
knew. Oh, and they were like, probably that Irish fucker.
They're probably like, it's one of these beggars. Let's just question a lot of them. But then, because they did question loads of people, but they questioned him as well. But there's just no evidence for any of it. Then he was... nothing happened. 18 months later, 68-year-old Morris Whaley was found dead with his face and genitals mutilated in Soho.
These murders aren't really linked, though. Like, you wouldn't look at someone pushed in front of a train, someone stabbed in the neck, someone sexually mutilated. Like, they're not...
That's why he got away with it.
Tied together as being one person.
Yeah, that's why he got away with it for so long. So he was in Soho and he'd been mutilated and then a bottle had been inserted into his rectum, like a broken bottle. Yeah. And this was something that he did a few times. So Kelly and other vagrants were found with blood on them nearby, and Kelly was charged with murder. But as there was only one witness and the witness was an alcoholic, he was considered an unreliable witness, and Kelly was acquitted. So basically, I think of the group of homeless people, one of them said he did it, and then the rest kind of kept quiet.
I would be well pissed off if I was this police officer, just this gang of vagrants, constantly just causing trouble amongst themselves. Thought yourselves out, lad. Why do I keep having to come down here to you group of guys, stabbing someone here, stealing something there? Like, it's all very kept together in this group of, you know... drifters.
I think it was mostly Kelly as well. I think the others were just sort of like tagging along, but we'll find out why they were tagging along in a bit, sort of bribing them a little bit. What would you bribe homeless alcoholics with?
Alcohol.
Yeah, there you go. What I was thinking, we're starting to have Soho, we've had Stockwell tube station, we've had Clapham Churchyard, there is an opportunity for merch here. Kieran Kelly Monopoly. I think that'd be amazing.
Everywhere that there was done a murder.
So in 1983, another elderly panhandler was pushed on the tracks at Kensington Station. There we go, get two stations, you get a bonus. But the train driver managed to stop in time.
Oh.
So he didn't die.
No way.
Yeah, he put on the brakes.
He must have been coming to a stop.
Yeah. Witnesses blamed Kelly. So this guy's not even trying to hide it. Like, literally, he's just
doing it. Always points the finger at him.
It's like he was here. Like, he was bloody getting away with it. Jurors failed to reach a verdict. So he was acquitted.
It is true. If you've not got enough evidence, though, people can... Like, you can have loads of people say it, but...
But at that point, they didn't know about the other guy that he pushed in front of the train. So there's just, like, this random murder.
They think it's in isolation.
Yeah, so they're like, well, he's never pushed anyone in front of a train before, so how do we know anything? So he was acquitted again. So Kelly, soon after this, Kelly went to Clapham Common, other place, with a friend, Paul McManus, and he approached a 75-year-old man and demanded he give them his watch and wedding ring. The man called the police and Kelly was arrested. So he tried to do a mugging, tried to get some guys to give him his stuff, and he was put into prison. He was drunk.
Right.
And he was put into prison to sort of sober up. And he was locked up with a load of other, what they say, transients or vagrants or homeless people. Yeah. Now, one of them pissed him off quite a lot. He wouldn't let him fucking sleep. So he crushed his skull and strangled him with a pair of stockings. I don't know where he's getting stockings from in prison.
No.
But, yeah, he just totally fucked him up.
Lost his shit.
But the worst thing was, there was another guy in there with them, and he did this, like, in the evening. The other guy had to sit in a cell with Kieran Kelly and a dead guy for the whole night.
Better not piss this guy off.
Just thinking, holy shit, get me out of here. So in the morning, when they went to give them his breakfast, this guy was just like, please let me out, I'll testify, I'll do whatever, just get me out of this cell. Because he was just freaked out. So then they charged, obviously, Kelly with murder again, and they knew that they could get him on this. So he just began confessing. And he just began confessing to all this other shit they didn't know about. So,
finally. Yeah. Something good. Just tell him.
He was like, yeah, I did it, and I also did this, and I also did this. And he was just...
He was probably just worn out, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, they're high-intensity murders. The pushing, the crushing. He's not getting any younger. Just give it up now. You can't live your life like that forever.
You can't. So, yeah, he was like...
Run out of stockings, for one.
So he confirmed that he would encourage homosexual advances from men and take victims somewhere they could be alone. So he'd be like, yeah, let's get it on. We'll go down to this quiet area in London, down this alley or whatever. Then he would anally rape them with a broken bottle until they bled to death. So he was a really disgraceful killer.
I mean, this is one of the good things about the internet, is that it stops things like this happening. Like, if he was alive now, he wouldn't need to go and anally rape people with a broken bottle. He could just tip-tappy-type, one man, one jar, and he can watch all the arse bleeding that he wants. But without that, you have to create it yourself. So I think that's something we have to thank the internet for.
If you are of a sensitive disposition, don't watch one man, one
I jar. Do not recommend you watching that video. Please do not. Just take my word for it.
You can just imagine. So to get rid of witnesses, he had a way of doing it. So what he did was he'd get a vodka and orange for everyone. Vodka and orange for everyone!
Vodka and an orange! Chuck it at your head.
Lovely. But then one of them, he would change out the vodka and put in surgical spirit or white spirit and orange. To be fair...
You wouldn't know the fucking difference.
Smart price vodka, I wouldn't fucking know.
Nope.
No idea. And then they would die from drinking that, apparently. But to be honest, I swear I've drunk that.
So he's probably killed, like... tons of people.
Well, yeah, quite a lot. I think it was probably about 13, but he confessed to a lot. He gave a load more examples of men he'd been talking to at the train station that he just pushed in front of the train that hadn't been connected.
The fact that all these people that were sexually assaulted and left to die, like, none of those came to the... Like, only the muggings of the old men
yeah.
are pushing in front of the trains. Like, again, it's that horrible... When we put such a stigma on certain sexual orientations, like, the fact that they were just... No one heard about those because it was obviously, like, a homosexual
yeah.
attack. It's so horrendous.
And you've got that age-old thing that's like, that's what gays do. They yeah. have sex with each other with broken bottles. No, they fucking don't! That's not a thing. But it's almost like this, oh, this sex game's gone wrong. Like, it's sort of... Like, that's kind of stigma that people give to people, which is just ridiculous, which is... It still happens now. We've got the recent Grindr killer who... they didn't twin those up because they just thought his sex game had gone wrong for a while. It's just ridiculous. So there was a lot of people that he said he'd been talking to, these men, who were feeling sort of down about their lives at a train station, but he'd thrown them in front of the train.
Helped them out.
Seeing the lights... Got the epiphany. Oh, obviously.
Are you sad? Die then.
God's telling me to kill you. So he pushed them in front of the train, and a lot of families who had not previously received life insurance because it would have been a suicide actually got a big payout because he said, oh, well, I killed them. So actually, it might be murder.
So it might be a nice thing then.
Well, not if he's actually killed them. If it was a suicide, it's nice.
If you're like, I'm going to kill myself and my family. Maybe he didn't kill any of them. Maybe he just went around claiming these suicides as his murders for the good of the families.
Maybe. Probably.
Maybe he's Saint Kelly. Who is it? What's his fucking name? Saint Kieran of Kelly.
Saint Kieran of Kelly, who's anally raping women with...
Oh, yeah. Okay, forget him. He's no longer a saint. Although, the Catholics would have him.
Low blow. But the reason that, like,
probably have him.
The reason he didn't get caught for ages is because he went for homosexuals plus police witnesses plus people who reminded him of Christy Smith. So he basically murdered all these random sets of people.
And reminded him of Christy. Different ways. His first love, who spurned him.
That is what Platt would have you believe. I'm going to check out his book. I think it sounds interesting. But the police didn't release a lot of this information because they were scared that if people found out that someone was pushing people on the tube, even after they'd been caught, they were scared that people would do copycat cat killings or that
because it is well easy to push someone in front of a tube.
I'm terrified every time. I'm trusting these people not to just bung me down. I mean, it is well easy. Like, someone could just decide, oh, I don't like the look of this girl.
Down.
They genuinely could. I'm trusting these people with my life. I won't walk near the platform with people behind me.
Really?
Yeah, because I don't know who those fuckers are. I see the look in their eyes.
I've never even considered this as something to be scared
of. No. Oh, well, I think I'm going to die most days.
I'm just scared of the previous owners of my house coming back to demand their post.
You are.
That post
that you ripped open.
I didn't rip it open.
It's not illegal.
I just put it in the bin. I did just put it in the bin.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Could have had money in it.
No, I don't give a fuck. If it's not got a return address on, what do you want me to do?
Just hold on to it till they come and collect it.
Bitch, please. Okay, I'm editing out the bits where I committed a crime.
Yeah, they were too scared and they thought that people wouldn't want to use the tube and people would
take dear God.
Another safe mode of transport, which people haven't got a choice anyway.
Protect the tube.
A lot of the details weren't shared until 2013 because there was sort of this rule that after 30 years... You have to release the government papers. So right. Actually after 30 years, 2013, so he was convicted in 1983. In the future. He was convicted in 1983. So then they had all this information, which is when this guy started writing the book. He was convicted of 2 murders. And that's all they could get him on. They didn't dare go for any more, I think. But he was never getting out of prison anyway. So they kind of thought... That's enough.
Life forever.
That's done. Job done. So that is Kieran Kelly, the Irish murderer who moved to London and killed a bunch of people.
Thanks for that one, Storm.
It's all right. Thank God.
Not
it's
you.
All right. Thanks, Storm.
This week, I'm going to bring you something slightly different. But I hope you'll like it. So it's the story of an orphan child who would hang around the houses of poor women. He was heavily implicated in cases of several missing children, and he was reputed to be involved in the case of 3 boys that were found murdered in a pickle barrel.
So it is a murder story.
I bring you the story of St. Nicholas! Because it's Christmas, isn't it? I really wanted to do... I'm a massive fan of The American Office. Obviously the UK one too, but really love the US one.
So good.
And one of my favourites is when Dwight does Pennsylvania Dutch Christmas.
Yes!
And he tells them of the character of Belschnickel. And so originally I was going to do Belschnickel, Krampus, Sinterklaas, do all the creepy Christmas... Schwarzpete, do all the crazy Christmas characters. So I started with St. Nicholas, the original... And just got completely caught up in it and had no time to do anyone else. So I'm just bringing you something.
I'm happy
Nicholas,
with this.
But Christmas is fucked up generally.
I feel like I should have a mulled wine in my hand and a mince pie.
I had an entire bottle of mulled wine to myself last night. I was merry. Merry Christmas, my liver. Anyway. So, of course, because it's so old and because obviously... It has evolved into something else. The story is interwoven like a mixture of facts and some imagination and being embellished over time. But I think, as we know, and a lot of people interested in true crime, that sadly, facts come to a point where facts are what someone believes they are. And it's really, really hard to say, to actually present anything as empirical evidence, because there is always somebody who will find a way of trying to say it's not.
There's always some fucker undermining you.
Like, they brought out the blowpoke. They found the bastard blowpoke. And yet still...
They didn't even touch it. No one even moved it.
And yet still they said Cobwebs. He killed someone with it. So, like I'm saying, facts are, in some cases, irrelevant. Annoyingly so. So, St. Nicholas... Just Nicholas, as a baby, born around the 3rd or 4th century in the village of Patara. This was in what was Greece, so he was Greek, but now it's part of what is modern Turkey. And a lot of this information comes from an account written in the 9th century, I went deep, written in the 9th century by Michael the Archimandrite, which just means he was a monk, a superior monk. And obviously monks at the time didn't really have much to do except
copying out the Bible.
Exactly. Sit on their ass, copy out the Bible, maybe do a little bit of biography.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare tri-term medical plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Typical work. So Michael, being the head one, was off Bible copying and was allowed to use his creativity. And he definitely had a flair for the dramatic and a fondness of wombs. Oh. The number of times...
Love a good womb, I do.
I just think... womb
with a view.
I mean, it must come from the fact that they're celibate away from women. It must have been a bit of a fascination. But I must have counted in one paragraph he used the word womb 10 times. Like, that's not normal, Michael.
I'm waiting for the comments saying, they said this is the word womb and they both giggled.
Oh, I'm sorry. Just because you haven't got one. That was a review for Michael, the Archimandrite. So, Nicholas's parents were very rich and very righteous. Because as we know, those things go hand in hand. It's super easy to be righteous when you've got the money to do so.
Yeah.
You don't need to buy your food. And his first miracle occurred at his birth. Now, what possible miracle could have happened?
He didn't scream and cry.
That would have been nice. Nope.
He did the washing up.
No, I'll give you one more guess. The second he came out, there was a miracle happened.
He shouted, "Slay, true crime!"
He made his mother infertile. Yeah.
Grabbed the cervix as he came out, dragged it out with it.
No more!
Just me.
Well, I mean, give Michael some props for a silver lining here. Who else could turn? I mean, one, how did they fucking know? Unless he literally did pull everything out with him. But the way he phrased it was, well... John the Baptist of Bible times, when he was sent, he rid his mother's womb. That's, again, lots of wombs. He rid his mother's womb of an affliction, whereas Nicholas provided his mother with one. I was like, what? That is not a nice thing to do.
No.
He was like, it's the opposite of John the Baptist. It's a miracle. No, it's just horrid.
So did she not want any more kids? And so she was like, happy days, no contraception. I don't have to go through this ordeal again.
Possibly.
That would be quite nice.
Another good one.
If you're on the final one.
I mean, it's a struggle trying to turn forcing your mother to be infertile when you were born to be a miracle.
Yeah.
And they phrase it as that he was such a perfect child that there'd be no point anyway. None could.
No one's better than me.
No to him. There's... Oh, fuck. What's he called? There's a comedian who does songs, and I've forgotten his name, but he sings a song about Jesus's brother, Craig, about how he lives in his shadow. I might play it at the end of the podcast, because it's funny. But yeah, and so it said that though his mother was sterile in flesh, she was fertile in spirit. Because when you have something fucked up like that happen to you, you really want to start praying. So here's where Michael gets judgy. He starts talking about Nicholas's childhood and said that he was nurtured, as is befitting of an infant, from the maternal breast. Don't tell everyone they've got a breastfeed, Michael. What do you fucking know? Nothing. But Nicholas's mum definitely struggled as well, because this is counted as his second miracle. But it said that he would only feed on Wednesdays and Fridays once a day. As a baby, he would only suck milk Wednesday and Friday.
A bit like my dog. No, I only remember to feed him on Wednesdays and Fridays.
Poor thing. He's just chewing off my leg. Don't know why.
No, I do feed him.
Apparently that's common with priests. That's what a lot of priests do. They fast apart from Wednesdays and Fridays.
Oh, it's like the 2-5 diet.
Yeah, apparently so. Well, common with priests and with children whose mums have fucking rank nipples. Yeah. Like, I don't know what was wrong with it. It's like, ugh, I'll wait till I'm starving, mum. Yeah. Not now. So it's then he then said that as a young boy, he grew up very kind in nature and spirit, and he was managed to avoid political involvement and corruption from the business world. Which, unless you're a child of Donald Trump, I think that's pretty fucking easy to do before the age of 16. Yeah. I don't remember being...
I didn't know shit about shit when I was 16.
Come and buy these shares in yo-yos. Didn't happen to me as a child. And in the 4th century, I'm not quite sure what the corruption of the business world looked like. But then nothing is new under the sun.
No.
So at 16, both of his parents died. It doesn't say how.
Oh.
Mysterious, I think. Miracle number 3, the opposite of everyone else's parents. They stayed alive, you died. Potentially. But they left him with a huge fortune.
Oh.
But Nicholas...
There's your motive.
Well, however, he was determined to surrender his wealth and possessions. Oh. So once he inherited it, he prayed...
How old was he?
16.
What 16-year-old saying no to that money? Although, we all go through that phase, don't we? I'm a hippie, I'm going to get my possessions away. I was going to say, at 16 was...
Yeah, that was probably the age when I was most...
Mm-hmm. Who needs these items?
I'm not cynical enough yet to realise it's all a construct.
Although, Pandora bracelet.
So he said it was for, like, piety, but I think it's probably the fact that he wanted nothing to do with a family that starved him as a baby.
He's religious. He doesn't want this food. He's just sitting there like, please...
He's such a quiet child. I have no strength.
Yeah.
So then comes the first story of how he got rid of his wealth. This is probably the most widely documented among the primary sources and classic sources.
Did he put it all on a jacket like Michael Barrymore used to do and just run through the crowd?
He didn't, but that would have been a great Christmas tradition. Christmas would have looked very different if that had happened. No, but it did lead to some of the... You'll see the hints of modern Christmas in it. So it said that there was a man who had 3 daughters, all of them shapely and attractive to the eye. Fit. Yeah, which, irrelevant.
Yeah.
Who gives a... Like, you ugly bitches can starve, but the shapely ones... so these shapely young ladies...
Doesn't say what shape, to be fair.
It could be, say. There could be a circle. Gonna be a fucking number 8, like me. So these attractive women, they fell on hard times, and the dad was like, "There's nothing else for it. I'm gonna have to send them to a brothel. Like, that's it."
What?
Yeah, he said it was said that
capitalize on these shapes.
That there was no, I can't remember what Michael said. Something about that no men of repute would be willing to marry them without reimbursement or something. I was like, well, they sound like dickheads.
You triangle, get shagging.
So it said that Nicholas caught wind of this and couldn't stand for it. I mean, how dare women go out and profit from their own resources? He must put a stop to it. They must be kept down.
We could just give them money.
Well, that's kind of what he did. but in a fucking creepy way.
Oh.
So,
I will have sex for you, but I will pay you double.
Oh, that would have been good. I don't know. I didn't think the brothel thing sounded so bad, but that obviously it is. Prostitution for a lot of people is not nice.
Yeah, there's a lot of syphilis then as well.
But when I was at university, sort of the secret diary of a call girl books became really popular,
mm-hmm.
and we all read them and were like, do you know what? This is a really viable option. I mean, I think the reality of sex work isn't quite as glamorous as it's portrayed. I could just go out, do a shag in for some money.
There's lots of people who are happily working in the sex industry, though, aren't there?
Well, to be honest, I'm doing most of it for free, so it'd be nice if I could get a bit of extra cash for it while I'm at it anyway. Prostitution, not attractive then, and he wanted to stop it. So, as with most knobheads, he couldn't just go and give the money straight out. He needed to do it in a really modest way. Some more later tales tell that he put the money down the chimney. Hence why Santa comes down the chimney. Or another story tells that he hid by their fireplace every night.
Bit creepy.
And then left the money. A little creepier.
Why did he need to go near the fireplace?
Specifically the fireplace.
Just up the fireplace listening to their conversation.
Well, and then I looked at... Well, at this time and in this area, they wouldn't have had chimneys.
Oh.
So it's not... That's an embellishment. What it says in the early transcripts is that he hurled it through a window at night.
So he just vandalized.
Just literally... And then ran off. Literally, he just ran... And all
smashed the window.
I read about four different accounts from, like, the 12th century down, and all of them say that he threw it through a window. He didn't just place it, nothing. Didn't put it on the doorstep. He literally lobbed it at them sleeping. Have it.
I mean, that's... You'd feel very ambivalent, wouldn't you? Like, someone's threatening me with a rock through my window, but they're paying for the cleanup, so...
Okay. So when the father got the money... he immediately paid someone to marry his daughter. I thought, oh, he gave them the money so they could all live together. No, he just paid someone off.
No.
You take her. Have the oblong. She's the best. The most pointy. This was then repeated. So this happened and then...
Have the oblong.
A couple of nights later, it was repeated for the second daughter. This time, apparently, the father was so overwhelmed by the kindness that he was struck dumb. Mute. I mean, he's already a twat. He's trying to pay, but couldn't speak. This didn't stop Michael, the Archimandite. No. Right. He was able to go on at length about exactly what prayers this guy said, but I think he was interpreting the groans. And there were lots of feast metaphors, which I can't really cope with right now because I'm fucking starving.
Must be sort of like translating, saying, oh, he said this.
In the translation, it says that he made groans, which would be...
He's saying I'm really handsome.
Yeah.
Saying he wants to give me a cooked dinner.
He's saying he wants me to have the triangle one. So yeah, then he married off the second daughter. So by now the dad was determined to catch the benefactor. I mean, I think he's taking it a bit for granted. Someone's lobbed two sacks of money through your window and you're like, well, he's obviously going to do it for number three. Mm. What he's going to? Like, you don't deserve any of this.
No presumption.
Don't assume that circles get in it as well.
Assuming things makes an ass of you and me.
Never assume. But he did. So he waited up at night to catch him. St. Nicholas strolled on by, lobbed it through the window, but the guy woke up when the gold hit the floor and ran after him and was able to catch it with him later.
Slit his throat. There must be gold inside of him!
I mean, I just think if you're such a fucking fast runner, you should have been able to put it to good use to make money for his family. Like,
yeah.
I don't know, be an Olympic sprinter. You're fighting in Greece, after all.
Yeah.
So that story sort of comes from his benevolence and why St. Nicholas is known for giving gifts, one of the reasons. After this, in his life story, Nicholas became a bishop. But how, I hear you cry. He wasn't even a priest. And as we all know, priest, then bishop, pedo.
I was thinking it.
Pedo, then priest, then bishop is probably the trajectory that you're aiming for.
Yeah.
Scout leader, pedo, priest.
How many of those should we keep in? There's enough evidence to back up these claims.
But no, he wasn't a priest and he became a bishop. A proper outcry. But it was not because of his miracles. I love this story. So he became the Bishop of Myra. So the previous Bishop of Myra had died and they couldn't decide who was going to do it. They were all sat around discussing it for ages and ages. And then one of them had the brainwave of, next person to walk through that door, called Nicholas, he'll be the one.
Yeah.
Like, they literally was like, fuck it, the next person to come through that door can have it.
We're saying that's him, can't be asked.
I am beyond caring now.
Next man I see, I'm going to get married to.
Pretty much. Which just, and again, this was called a miracle as well. This is counted as one of St. Nicholas's miracles, which I think goes to show that literally anything can be a miracle if you're lazy enough to let it happen.
Right. The kettle boiled, it's a Christmas miracle.
You mean I could do that about anything? Like, the next car that I walk in front of is going to be the one that kills me. Yes, it fucking is, but it's not going to be a miracle. So that was one. A few other things that he did. He's also known for destroying the Temple of Artemis. Now, this was a time Constantine became the emperor, sort of that empire, and Christians weren't persecuted anymore. So Nicholas and the others went out to destroy the idols that had been created. So Artemis was the goddess of fertility, and we know how much he hated that, having ripped his own mother to shreds at birth. So he set out, sort of waged a war on Artemis particularly, which I find bizarre. But yeah, there were many other miracles attributed to him. So some of the first ones, healing of a withered hand.
Withered hand.
Expelling demons from a cypress tree. Oh. I mean, I'm not quite sure what trouble this tree was causing people.
Yeah. I mean, how do you know it's got demons in it to start with?
I think he must have been caught doing something weird. They were like, oh, Nicholas, why have you got that your dick in a tree? it's demons. Demons! I've sorted them out. Everything's fine. Nothing to see here. There are at least two separate stories where a child that held a golden cup was spirited away by St. Nick and transported to somewhere else. Just, yep, off they go. And then we also get to the story, my favourite one, of the bodies in a barrel. So the story goes, I mean, there's lots of children's books about this as well. This is more of a French traditional tale. It's more of a French traditional tale. And you can see lots of nice things about this. So the story is three boys that were country lads and enjoyed playing the fields were wandered into the town. They didn't know where they were. They were overwhelmed. The glittering lights of the lanterns, the beautiful patterns in the mud road. And so stayed out too late. They were hungry, tired, and so they stopped at a butcher's. Knocked on his door, said, oh, please, can you give us somewhere to sleep? Can you give us something to eat? And he was like, sure. In you come, my pretties. Slashed them into bits.
Nope.
Just chopped them all up. Didn't even feed them.
Didn't even feed them first. Didn't even give them dinner. Just slashed them up from the up.
Well, like, if you just...
Doesn't know the protocol.
Like Hansel and Gretel, she at least fattened them up a bit first. A lot of the evil witches in stories will fatten up the children. The evil butchers are wasting time.
I mean, nowadays, you wouldn't even have to try fattening them up. They're all... already there.
So the story is that he just chopped them up. I don't know quite why he would have done this, because they weren't pissing him off, but he chopped them up and put them in a barrel, like a pickle barrel, so like salted or brine, and kept them there for 7 years. So he wasn't eating them, he wasn't fucking them,
saving them for the great fasts of...
apparently the great fast of Monday Tuesday. So 7 years, so pretty fucking rank. But apparently this is when Nicholas arrived at the door of the butcher's. Came in, the butcher tried to offer him other food, and he was like, no, I want it from this barrel. This salty, stinky barrel over shit. Here. Opened it up and resurrected the children. They all popped out. I mean, now, if you look at pictures of St. Nicholas, one of the most common ones you will see is three children in a little barrel at his feet in Western... iconography.
And all their parents were already dead.
I was going to say, like, everyone's given up on you.
We've got some, like, elderly parents now.
It'll be like Flight of the Navigator, where they come back and they're like, time's moved on and I'm still young. What am I going to do? Fly backwards. I can't remember how they solve it in Flight of the Navigator, but... a more original story of it, it was three students who went to an inn and were drugged and then murdered.
I mean, it sounds more believable that they went out on the rise.
Exactly. I thought that. I was like, well, that's a story I can get on board with. And I would also understand, but maybe there was some reason why the innkeeper was out murdering these people. But I guess it wasn't as sympathetic. Like, yeah. If these poor children were murdered, not these...
Yeah, little freshers, I mean...
But this is probably all bullshit. And in Butler's Lives of Saints, a book he writes about St. Nicholas, and he says that a lot of the older paintings, in the story where he threw the money into the window, the three bags of money, he said people wrongly interpreted that as being the heads of children.
Oh, God.
And is where that story came from. I mean, you're kind of... It could be. The paintings were shit.
I mean, it totally changes the story. Oh, he threw a child's head through the window. I'm marrying my daughter off. I mean, it makes no sense.
There's another story where there's a pawnbroker and he throws three gold balls through the window. So I can see how those were linked, the bags of money, the gold balls. I mean, the paintings are awful. I did have a good time looking through some galleries of pictures of St. Nicholas, where he's literally just stood. And in those older pictures, they're all front on. There's no perspective. Front on, hand flopped in a window. And one of them, it's like bars of gold, like just onto the heads of sleeping women. Brilliant. They were shit. But I'm not sure. I think that's a bit far of like, oh, it looks like a head. Because it says he resurrected them whole. I hope he didn't just resurrect the heads and then rolled them around town. But in the French stories, he then keeps the butcher with him as punishment. The worst punishment he can think of, you've got to hang around with me forever. Oh, and he just God. Sort of follows him around as his little helper. So those are some of the stories. There are loads more. Obviously those were miracles that are sort of attributed to his life. There are tons of miracles after, when people say they saw visions of him and he came. And one of his more lasting miracles is to do with his remains.
Oh.
So he obviously, despite all the discrepancies throughout his life, there was a person, and he is buried, his remains are being held in Bari in Italy. So there's many pilgrimage go there, and they found that water would gather around the bones of St. Nicholas, and they called this manna and would start bottling it up and selling it for its healing properties. And then it would just refill again. I mean, I immediately...
Was it in, like, a dip in the floor?
They said that they investigated it, and they were like, there's no way it could be getting in. It's obviously some freak spring something. I mean, I immediately just thought of John Gacy's Crawl Space, which I watched a documentary just last night, actually, about where when they were excavating his basement, it would constantly be flooding, and that was his defense as to why it smelled bad. He was like, well, it just floods every year, that's why it's the stink of rotting bodies.
Although whenever I wear jeans that are really long when it's raining, the smell of my wet trousers is like nothing I've ever smelled before.
Oh man.
Do you know when I was like a teenager and all those really wide like bell bottom trousers,
they were the worst, they just soaked up the rain. People like you also thought this is bullshit. So in 1954, they were doing some renovation in the basilica, and they exhumed his bones and put them in an urn exposed so the public could go and just see them. And people said that they observed the bones perspiring. I mean, what? I mean, you see that and you're like, I want me some bone sweat.
That's some sweaty bones.
The only thing I want to be drinking right now. The sweat of those centuries-old bones. I mean, whatever kind of liquid is coming out of there, please stop ingesting it. It's really not gonna be good. Apparently, the cloth was soaking wet around them, and they've now preserved that, so you can't go and see his bones every day, but you can go and see the cloth that the bones were once held in, which is terribly exciting. And then in 1980, so very recent, 1980, they started formally extracting the liquid every year on May 9th. Like, it's still happening.
No way.
So May 9th, because that's the day that the remains were transferred to Italy, rather than on St. Nicholas's Day, which is December the 6th. So every year they formally extract it. They get about 50 millimetres of bone juice.
No way.
And sell it off. Also, these fucking mad bastards have used his skull when they exhumed it in the 50s. They took measurements and x-rays and things.
That's kind
and
of
have
older.
Reconstructed his face. You can
Oh, yeah, like they did with King Richard.
Yeah, you can see what he would have looked like. So I'll put a picture up on the Twitter later so you can see that where they compare the reconstructed face to the icon faces, and like, it's obviously real. You can see, I mean, the website that was showing it is like stnicholas.org, and it's like a Catholic charity run thing, so they're obviously trying to prove that it's real. They're like, look, the similarities are there, and like, the main similarities are his hair and clothes.
Yeah.
Neither of which I believe they could have got from the skull. I mean, he has the exact same little receding hairline, which you can say shit about. There's no way they would have known what hairstyle that guy was rocking. The main thing that I've noticed is his nose is totally different. I mean, I think it's artistic styles for the long pointy nose. But
they made everyone look a little bit fitter in those pictures anyway, didn't they?
But there's probably no possible way that you can say, look at these paintings of him, look at this reconstruction of him, because it's completely different unless you're looking at the things they couldn't have done. But I love that they tried.
Yeah.
I think, go for it.
Someone's convinced.
I think we should just put the whole skeleton on display.
I want. Do you know, remember when the internet was almost sort of new, like in the 90s, and every fucker had a webcam for something? It was like a live webcam feed of my pond in the garden, live webcam feed of the traffic outside
my road.
That's happening
now. That's Facebook Live.
Live webcam feed of those bones sweating. That's what I want.
Yes. We need a little time lapse of the sweaty bones.
Yeah.
I think.
I want to be able to tune in and watch the sweat pour as and when.
Lick it off. Cure my gout.
Oh,
so that's the story of St. Nicholas. And obviously there's creepy ones too. Like Belshnickel was the inspiration. Like, go look at him. He's the one that whips the children. And sometimes doesn't even whip them if they're naughty. Just whips them to make sure that they're good next time.
Preemptive.
Which is good.
If you would like to send us a weird murder to read out at the end of one of our podcasts, please email us at slaughterthepodcast@gmail.com. We love getting your emails and tweets and Facebook messages, so keep them up. Have a nice Christmas, guys.
Merry Christmas!
Bye!
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.